Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Prahlad, the saintly son of Haranyakashipu. We'll just read text 23 for the fifth time. We set a record. Maybe we'll do it for the whole month of July. Has anyone memorized this verse yet? Well, you should, by the next 15 times, you should have it all done. Shri Praruvacha. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atma Nivedanam. Oh, Shri Praruvacha. Prahlad Maharaj said, Shravanam, hearing, Kirtanam, chanting, Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu, not anyone else, Smaranam, remembering, Padasevanam, serving the feet, Archanam, offering worship, which showed Dasho Pachara, the 16 kinds of paraphernalia. Vandanam, offering prayers. Dasyam, becoming the servant. Sakyam, becoming the best friend. Atma Nivedanam, surrendering everything, whatever one has. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming His servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto Him. In other words, serving Him with the body, mind, and words. These 9 processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these 9 methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. So we're up to Archanam. After Padasevanam comes the process of Archanam, worship the deity. If one is interested in the process of Archanam, one must positively take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and learn the process from him. There are many books for Archana, especially Narada Pancharatra. In this age, the Pancharatra system is particularly recommended for Archana, deity worship. There are 2 systems of Archana, the Bhagavat system and Pancharatriki system. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no recommendation of Pancharatriki worship, because in this age, in this Kali Yuga, even without deity worship, everything can be perfectly performed simply through hearing, chanting, remembering, and worship at the lotus feet of the Lord. Rupa Goswami states, Sri Vishnu Shravane Parikshit A Bhavad Vayasiki Kirtane Pralada Smarane Tarangri Bhajane Lakshmi Pritu Pujane Kuras Tva Abhivandane Kapi Patir Dasye Ta Sakye Arjuna Sarasvatma Nivedane Balir Abhut Krishna Tir Esha Param Esham Param. Pariksha Maharaj attained salvation simply by hearing, and Shukadeva Goswami obtained salvation simply by chanting. Prahlad Maharaj attained salvation by remembering, The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Di, attains self-perfection by worshipping the Lord's lotus feet. Prithu Maharaj attains salvation by worshipping the deity of the Lord. Akura attains salvation by offering prayers. Hanuman by rendering service. Arjuna by establishing friendship with the Lord. And Bali Maharaj by offering everything to the service of the Lord. All these great devotees serve the Lord according to a particular process, but every one of them attained salvation and became eligible to return home back to Godhead. This is explained in the Bhagavatam. Well, we don't have to go on Padyatra today. We just read the purple. It is therefore recommended that initiated devotees follow the principles of Narada Pancharatra by worshipping the deity in the temple. Especially for householders, devotees who are opulent in material possessions. The path of deity worship is strongly recommended. An opulent household devotee who does not engage his hard-earned money in the service of the Lord is called a miser. That's right around the board. So. One should not engage paid brahmanas to worship the deity. If one does not personally worship the deity, but engages paid servants instead, he is considered lazy. And his worship of the deity is called artificial. An opulent householder can collect luxurious paraphernalia for deity worship, and consequently for household devotees, the worship of the deity is compulsory. In our Krishna consciousness movement, there are brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. But the deity worship in the temple should be performed especially by the householders. The brahmachari can go with the sannyasis to preach, and the vanaprastha should prepare themselves for the next status of renounced life, sannyas. Grihastha devotees, however, are generally engaged in material activities, and therefore if they do not take to deity worship, their falling down is positively assured. All right. Something, be positive. If you're going to fall down, you might as well do it positively. You really want me to repeat it? The deity worship means following the rules and regulations precisely. That will keep one steady in devotional service. Generally, householders have children, and then the wives of the householders should be engaged in caring for the children, just as women acting as teachers care for the children in a nursery school. Grihastha devotees must adopt the archana vidhi, or the deity worship, according to the suitable arrangements and directions given by the spiritual master. Regarding those unable to take to the deity worship in the temple, there is the following statement in the Agni Purana. Any householder devotee circumstantially unable to worship the deity must at least see the deity worship, and in this way he may achieve success also. The special purpose of deity worship is to keep oneself always pure and clean. Grihastha devotees should be actual examples of cleanliness. Deity worship should be considered along with hearing and chanting. Therefore, every mantra is preceded by the word Namaha. In all the mantras, there are specific potencies of which the Grihastha devotees must take advantage. There are many mantras preceded by the word Namaha, but if one chants the holy name of the Lord, he receives the result of chanting Namaha many times. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can reach the platform of love of Godhead. One might ask, then, what is the necessity of being initiated? The answer is that even though the chanting of the holy name is sufficient to enable one to progress in spiritual life to the standard of love of Godhead, one is nonetheless susceptible to contamination because of possessing a material body. Consequently, special stress is given to the archana vidhi. One should therefore regularly take advantage of both the Bhagavad process and Pancharatrika vidhi. Deity worship has two divisions, namely pure and mixed with fruitive activities. For one who is steady, deity worship is compulsory. Observing the various types of festivals, such as Janmasthami, Ram Navami, and Nrisimha Chaturdasi, is also included in the process of deity worship. In other words, it is compulsory for householder devotees to observe these festivals. Namo Vishnu Vidai Krishna Prasthai Bhutai Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasudunde Vegoravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyade Sitarane. So we got up to half the purport. Almost. According to the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there are five powerful processes of devotional service, beginning with Nam Kirtan, chanting the holy name. Then there is Archa Sevana, or Bhagavat Sevana, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deity, as well as serving the devotees and making the atmosphere spiritual or living in a holy place. So they all have the same objective in mind, because according to the, I forget the Purana now, which is Smarta Vyakta Sadatam Vishnu Vismarta Chaktina Kinshit Sarva Vidhi Nisedya Asyura Etira Eva Kinkara. That all the different processes, all the Vidhis, and all the Nisedyas, it's not the Padma Purana, is it? It's the Padma. Okay, somewhere. Svaita Svartara Upanishad. He's our Shastra there. Padma Purana. Yeah, yeah. There's only, we only have it, we have the Padma Purana, we have the Shveta Shveta Upanishad, so it's one of those. It's always. Generally, Prabhupada quotes from the Padma Purana, or at least, although Rupa Goswami generally quotes of either the Shveta Shveta Upanishad or the Padma Purana, or these seem to be very prominent. There's a few others that are prominent. What else is prominent? Okay. So everyone should remember that. You can't always remember Krishna and never forget him. At least you should remember what the verse is. Tells you to do it. Otherwise we're completely lost. The idea is that our actual real existence is always being conscious of Krishna. Either here or in the spiritual world, everyone is always conscious of Krishna. And therefore everything is meant simply to help us come back to that platform of being conscious of Krishna. It's like when the spark is in the fire, then it glows. And as soon as the spark goes out of the fire, then it loses its brightness. So somehow or another, if we're in the fire of Krishna consciousness, then we'll glow. Otherwise, we'll become dull. Unfortunately, we're used to being dull. And when we get a little bit into the fire, we think that's something extraordinary. But actually being dull is extraordinary. Only a few rebellious souls in this material world have become dull. Unfortunately, we happen to be among them. So now we have to get back into the fire of Krishna consciousness. When Vidura came back after pilgrimage, Maharaj Yudhisthira greeted him and said, Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhutak Swayam Vibho Tirtha Korvanti Tirthani Swantak Stena Kathabritaha. That saints like yourself, Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas, you're actually places of pilgrimage. Tirtha Kurvanti Tirthani. Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhutak Swayam Vibho. That wherever you are a place of pilgrimage. But what makes someone a place of pilgrimage? If you carry around some dust from the holy place, you become a holy place yourself? No, it's actually by remembering Krishna that one becomes a holy place of pilgrimage. Now we may remember Krishna a little bit, or we may remember Krishna a lot. We may remember Krishna all the time, but just in this not a very profound way. So this is the five stages of progressive Krishna Smaranam. So we've understood that hearing, chanting, and remembering culminate, or hearing and chanting really culminate in remembering. We emphasize kirtan because within kirtan there's also chanting, because you can't have kirtan without chanting. But profound kirtan and chanting is also includes remembrance. And the five stages of progressive Krishna Smaranam. And for us, as we went over, generally it goes over Smaranam, ordinary Smaranam, remembering Krishna sometimes, to Dharana, to focusing in on Krishna as a person. Then Dhyana, actually starting to meditate upon Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes. And then from there we get Anusmriti, or here in the purport said Dhruva Anusmriti, which means that we're not only remembering Krishna's pastimes, but we're actually practicing, we're entering into them, we're experiencing them with our spiritual senses. Just like when I say that pastime, when Krishna was seen walking in the bank of the Jamuna, he was seen nicely decorated with tilak on his forehead, and his body was covered with garlands of forest flowers and tulsi leaves. Actually, his body was smeared when Krishna was seen walking in the bank of the Jamuna, he was seen nicely decorated with tilak on his forehead, and his garland with different kinds of forest flowers. His body was smeared with the pulp of sandalwood and tulsi leaves. The bumblebees became mad after the treasure and the sweetness of the atmosphere. And being pleased by the humming sound of the bees, Krishna began to play upon his flute. And the combined sounds became so sweet to hear that the aquatic birds, like the cranes, the ducks, and the swans, stopped swimming and flying and became stunned, and then they closed their eyes and entered into a trance of meditation in worship of Krishna. So, just to hear that pastime, that's called Smarana. Just to recite it, for instance, is Smarana. Now, if we're actually focusing on Krishna, and we actually see him in his form, Krishna has a garland of forest flowers, blue forest flowers, red forest flowers, and red forest flowers. If you don't believe me, just meditate on the pastime, and you'll see those flowers too. And Krishna's his body has the smell of aguru, which is a combination of sandalwood and musk and camphor. I think camphor also. So you can smell. Now everyone should smell Krishna. If you've never smelled musk, then you're very unfortunate. But anyhow, if you really meditate seriously, Krishna will let you know what musk smells like. And also tulsi leaves. Tulsi leaves, it says in another purport, tulsi leaves at a certain time of the day, they smell very nicely. And the bumblebees became mad after the treasure and sweetness of the atmosphere. So we hear the bumblebees humming. Chanting the holy names. The bumblebees. And Krishna becomes impressed by the humming sound of the bees, and he begins to play upon his flute. And we can hear the flute, we can hear the bumblebees, and then we can smell the garland, etc., etc. So in other words, when we actually start actively meditating on the pastime, that's called dhyana. And everyone can do it. It's not like only, you know, a Mahabhagavat. Prabhu, I heard you were meditating on Krishna's pastimes. Are you trying to become a sahaja? I'm reporting you to the GBC. What's the GBC told me to do it? Well, I'm reporting him to the whole body. We can't go on in our Hare Krishna movement, people thinking about Krishna. That's when you become advanced, Prabhu. That's when you think about Krishna. Try and be humble. You'll get puffed up and fall down if you think too much about Krishna. No, that's, we can do that. That's why these books are written, to give us an opportunity not just to read them superficially. It's like every day we read the Bhagavatam, or someone reads the Bhagavatam. And generally it's all superficial. It just kind of like, you know, floats in the atmosphere. Someone picks up a word or two, and it just kind of like goes over everyone's head, and you go, well, look at the Bhagavatam go. It's over. And we go, bye-bye, Bhagavatam. It's somewhere out there in the ether, you know. But we're actually supposed to capture it with our mind. It's supposed to enter into our mind, and we're supposed to form pictures. Not only pictures, experiences from the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is supposed to be an experience. And that experience is supposed to be, as when it goes Dhruva Anusmriti, the more we read Bhagavatam, then we may even pick it up so that during the day we remember it. So this is getting closer to samadhi. So this is the process, this is what we're supposed to do. But this is why it says for the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, theoretically, if they're actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, then the result is that they can carry the deity with them wherever they go through the process of remembrance. And as we'll find out later on in this purport, as from the Nectar of Devotion, there is a Vaivarta Purana, which is another Eva. The Vaivarta Purana. It tells about the story of a brahmana who was too poor. He couldn't afford deity worship. So he learned the process of meditation. And every day he'd go and he'd install the deities. And he'd go with his silver and gold vases or containers. He'd go to the Ganges. He'd go to the Jamuna, the Kaveri, the Saraswati, and obtain water from all these different places to bathe the deity. And in this way, he dressed the deity. Well, first of all, he bathed the deities. He dressed the deities. He fed the deities, etc., etc. So he did this for many, many years as a regular process. So this is also counted as deity worship because there are different types of deities. One of them is you made out of steel or made out of clay or painted in the sand or even within the mind. Krishna can appear within the mind in his different forms. This is usually considered a very nice form of deity worship, if one can actually do it. But other than that, Krishna also appears exactly as Krishna outside. For those who can't meditate on him within the mind, then they can meditate and do active service for Krishna with their physical senses. Therefore it says, Krite tadayato Vishnu, Tretiyam yajato mukai, Dwarpayam paricharyam, Kalotadari kirtana. Then in Satyuga, people would actually meditate directly on Krishna's pastimes. Now that directly on meditating on Krishna's pastimes meant that they were actually experiencing Krishna's pastimes through advanced Krishna consciousness. Now this wasn't done overnight either. Karimamuni took him 10,000 years. Luckily he had 100,000 years to live as an average lifespan. If you die prematurely, you only live for 900,000 years. No, that's not right. No, 90,000 years if you die prematurely. Oh, he died young. He was only 90,000 years old. So there was some time, 10,000 years, you know, spend your That would be like equivalent to our first 10 years, thinking, hearing about Krishna. And then they could directly meditate upon Krishna's pastimes. They'd experience Krishna directly when they became perfect. And not only Krishna and his associates, they were actually in the spiritual world. But when people became a little greedy after the end of 100,000 years of Satyayuga, actually it's a little bit more than 1,800,000 years, when that came to an end, people started to get more and more greedy, because every Satyayuga declines gradually also, and after 1,800,000 years, people became greedy. They started to think that their possessions belonged to them, because sense gratification was introduced. What was that sense gratification? They started to eat a little bit more than they were supposed to. That's always the first fall down. Before everyone looks beautiful, first you eat a little too much. Then everyone starts looking beautiful to you. Because it goes in a straight line. And generally speaking, someone probably told, you know, we had this feast last night, Prabhu, and after the sacrifice, wow, you can't believe it. You heard the glories of eating, overeating. You think, oh, I got to get, tell me when's the next feast, I'll come too. So that started, and then people started to become attached to their material possessions. Because atyahara priyasis cha prajalpo niyamagraha. It all begins with priyasis. Actually, not priyasis. And it begins with atyahara. Ati means too much, and ahara means eating. So that's where it all begins. Next time you see the two club gymnasts on your plate, make a decision. Where do you want to go? Atyahara. So atyahara, and then people would have to offer, because from atyahara comes priyasas. If you want to eat more than you need, then you have to work more than you need. Just like that Brahmin that Prabhupada talks about, who was in he was in Bengal. And one king heard about this very nice Brahmin, that he was very renounced. So he came to him and said, my dear Brahmin, I'd like to help you. I'd like to give you some assistance. How can I help you? So the Brahmin said, I don't need your help. He said, I have everything I need. He said, but you look very poor. He said, that's all right. I have everything I need. My students, they go out and beg a little rice. They're not very good collectors, but we get enough. They're not really trained very well. I was never a good collector in my brahmachari years either. That's why I'm so thin. In any case, they're even worse than I am, but we're still alive at least. And I have this, my wife cooks the rice, and we have this tamarind tree, and we take some leaves and we boil them, and I'm completely satisfied. I don't need your help. Because as soon as you take help from someone, then you become obliged to them, and life becomes more complicated. So, this, in Treta Yuga, people became more, their lives became more complicated. And therefore, sacrifice was introduced so that the excess accumulation of wealth they had could be thrown into the fire sacrifice on behalf of Vishnu. And therefore, their minds would become purified and they could actually start meditating upon Krishna again. But at the end of Treta Yuga, with 1,200,000 years, people started to become even more greedy. Not only they started to eat too much, that tendency, but they began to collect too much. And therefore, they put things aside to save for later. And therefore, deity worship was introduced. Regulation was introduced in Dwarapa Yuga. With the conception that everything belongs to the deity, and you should not hoard things, you should utilize everything for the deity. The deity is watching you. He knows if you're good or bad, so be good for goodness sake. So then people would actually perform regulated deity worship. The word regulation is very important. And here it says, devoid of false ego. So initiation became especially important. The kind of initiation that we conceive of is being introduced in Dwarapa Yuga. Now initiation in Treta Yuga and in Satya Yuga, we don't find that Karadamamuni was initiated, or others, or the way we look at it, because they were basically didn't have a false ego to begin with. But initiation means to accept the fact that I'm the servant of the servant of Krishna. So you have to be servant. There has to be someone that you're the servant of. Not that I'm the servant of the servant of Krishna. I'm the servant of all the devotees of Krishna. And whatever they say that I like, I follow. Just like when we had our original 11 acharyas, the devotees found out that some of their guru didn't like certain things that they liked. So that was a problem for them. Especially if their guru wouldn't accept certain types of prasadam, like pizza and ice cream, which is more or less, was considered the, you know, an essential ingredient in devotional service. So they accepted shiksha gurus, and they had the picture of their guru, they offered the regular prasadam to him, then they had their shiksha guru, who was more, you know, broad-minded and open. And they offered pizza and ice cream, and those who were really, you know, more or less on the edge, they offered chocolate too. No one was really sure exactly which parampara they came in. Anyhow, there are those who are more on the Raganuga platform. They accept anything. So this type of, you know, accepting of everyone is, you know, everyone is I'm a servant of everyone, which means I'm the servant of no one. So one has to accept someone who's actually a representative of Krishna in disciple succession and follow their instructions. So that was Dwarpa Yuga, and that instruction was mainly concerned that you're the servant of Krishna and how to perform deity worship. Not just mechanically, but with some kind of consciousness that here is a deity, it's Krishna, you should do it with love. As Prabhupada said in his talk concerning when he was installing Rukmini Dwarkadish, he said that first he gave the Rukmini Dwarkanath in Los Angeles, 1972, the first installation of deities in our society. What's that? Dwarkanath. The little ones. Probably it was actually 69. First time he installed deities in the La Cienega Boulevard Temple. And there he gave a talk, and next to last paragraph he said, we're offering our food, it should be done with devotion. It's not that Krishna, he needs your fruity halava, because the devotees, especially Prabhupada, like golden raisins. So he always, and halava was really much more popular than it is now, because you didn't really have a variety of preparations. The only thing the devotees knew was, the only sweets they had at that time were Simply Wonderfuls. That was pre-halava. And when the devotees discovered halava, when Prabhupada made halava, then it became super. You know, halva had to be there, at least every Sunday feast. And if it was there during the week, it was like, wow, we're in Vaikuntha. We're practicing in Goloka Vrindavan. So it's not, Prabhupada said, not that you all put raisins into the halva, because if you had raisins in the halva, it's considered extra opulent. And Krishna is so lusty, he has to eat your halva because you put raisins in it. Then Krishna says, oh, how do I get it? Oh, raisins, my God. All right. I'm into it. You become one with me. And then Prabhupada said, in the last paragraph, he said, just like he was Vamsi Das Babaji, and he said, well, no, he probably didn't want to go there. Vamsi, that was too elevated. And he said, no, so like Sanatana Goswami, he was hanging Madan Mohan within a tree. Because there was one Brahmin that Sanatana Goswami was doing Madhukari, going from householder to householder, just getting a little offering. Generally it was a roti. A roti was in, you know, one of these chapatis with a lot of butter on it. Roti meant, as I've said before, roti meant you took some flour and you put a little water on it. You tried to make it into a ball the best you could. And then you throw it into an open fire. And you hope it cooked. And usually half of it would cook on the outside, get burnt, and the other half was completely raw. So the sadhus used to eat this because they had nothing else to eat. Otherwise, you know, it was quite austere. But Sanatana Goswami, he had gotten the deity from this Brahmin, because Sanatana Goswami, Madan Mohan, came to the Brahmin in a dream and said, tomorrow one sadhu will come doing Madhukari, and you should give me to him. So he came, Sanatana Goswami came to his house, and he was given the deity of Madan Mohan. But he told Madan Mohan, he said, actually, you know, you don't know what you're getting into. So Madan Mohan said, no, it's all right, you're a great devotee, and I can tolerate. So but Sanatana Goswami was living underneath a tree, so he put Madan Mohan on a branch. So even Madan Mohan was a little surprised. So that went on for some time, and Sanatana Goswami would beg Madhukari, and he'd bring one roti, which means this half-baked, you know, ball of flour. And he kept on offering it to Madan Mohan. One day, Madan Mohan probably said he just couldn't take it anymore. He said, Sanatana Goswami said that, you know, every day you're offering me this dry roti. He said, can't you even put a little salt on it or something? So Sanatana Goswami said, today you're asking for salt. Tomorrow you're going to ask for sweets. He said, I'm an old man. I can hardly move. He said, please kindly accept. And Prabhupada said, Madan Mohan, he had to eat it. He said, because the bhakta was offering it. And then Prabhupada said, but what is your value? And what is the value of the things that you have? It is nothing. He said, my dear Krishna, I brought this to you. I'm rotten and I'm fallen. But I brought this to you. And then Prabhupada started to cry. But please kindly accept it. And then Prabhupada said, don't be puffed up. Always remember you're dealing with Krishna. That is my advice to you. Thank you. So that's deity worship. Otherwise, mechanically offering, as it says, there are different types of deity worship. Generally, the neophyte is interested in getting something from the deity. As that famous song goes, give me a house, give me a wife, give me a color TV, Om Jai Jagadisha Hari. So without this love for Krishna, then it's simply mechanical. Or as Prabhupada said in another lecture, he said, when Prabhupada saw that they're offering the deity just these dry flowers, rotten flowers, he said that there are two types of deities. One is called the Vigraha, the form of the deity. The other is called Galagraha. Galagraha means the pain in the neck. He said, my rascal spiritual master, he's giving me these deities to worship, but they're just a pain in the neck. So let me give them some rotten flowers and hope they're satisfied. Because I keep on giving them rotten flowers every day and they never protest. So it seems they're all right with it. It's a lot cheaper. The Prabhupada said they won't protest, but their protest is that you're going to go to hell. That will be their protest. So deity worship has to be done, not just mechanically, but it has to be done with care and attention, like everything else in devotional service. And that will bring one to the platform of being able to make some sacrifice for Krishna. Just like in this age, when people don't want to sacrifice and they don't even want to do deity worship, then the chanting of the holy name should inspire us to come to the temple and do some deity worship, to worship the form of Krishna, which will lead us to wanting to sacrifice for Krishna, which will lead us to actually thinking about Krishna. If we can't sacrifice for Krishna, if we can't worship Krishna, if we can't think about Krishna, then we'll never be able to meditate on Krishna. So the process in this age is chanting, but the chanting should manifest itself in willingness to worship the holy name, willing to sacrifice for the holy name, and willing to spread the holy name, to think about the holy name deeply, and to give it to others through our intense meditation on Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yes.
You've tried to make a point that the meaning of worship is to be conscious of Krishna. That's the ultimate goal. I wanted to ask how was if you can tell something about it. How was, for example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur after finishing his 12-hour sadhana at 10 in the morning and eating 2 chapatis and going for work? How was he conscious resolving all these complicated cases? If you can have any idea, how was he conscious of Krishna? Was he thinking like
Shilata? Oh, I have no idea how he was conscious of Krishna. you can read his, we sing, at least we used to sing, the Artik song. And there are Sharanagati prayers. But, you know, you can read Bhaktivinoda Thakura's Gopinath songs, all his songs, they tell you how he was conscious of Krishna in different ways. Did he feel the same way? No, Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he felt different ways.
I'm interested in, did he...
He was always conscious of Krishna.
With the same feeling as he is expressed in this Gopinath song, for example, at 10:15, solving some case, this feeling was inside, probably.
Different feelings of ecstasy. Nimitra Matram Bhava Savasachin, whatever he was doing externally, he was an instrument for Krishna. But deep inside himself, he was always merged in Krishna's pastimes. Actually being in Krishna's pastimes. Yes.
Hare Krishna. In this purport we have a list of 9 devotees who have attained perfection through those 9 through the 9 processes. But it seems that most of them appear perfect already. Like Prahlad Maharaj attains through...
Well, it's easy to be perfect when you're already perfect.
So how are we given these examples? Like Prahlad Maharaj, he was already invulnerable to fire and everything. Shukadeva Goswami was already so elevated, and they attained through these 9 processes.
Well, if you're going to have an example, you might as well have a real good example. These are really good examples. Because we don't know, for instance, Prahlad Maharaj said he was partially Nityasiddha, partially Sadhanasiddha. So he got perfection. When exactly he got perfection, whether in the womb of his mother or after he came out, that we don't know. But obviously, he exhibited... Not that necessarily by following the process, each one of them became perfect, but they exhibited the perfection. And therefore we can take shelter of their exhibition of their perfection to become perfect ourselves in one of these processes.
It's the way they showed their perfection, that's all, basically. Yeah. Akrura, when he saw, you know, Krishna and Balaram in the Jamuna, he offered beautiful prayers. But he could have did something else to show his devotion. There was different ways. So each perfected their own bhakti in a certain way by expressing that. The bhakti was already perfected, but it was expressed in that particular way. That's all.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.